The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley@admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's Monday, January the 23rd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Well, today's agricultural news is dominated by BSE. That's mad cow disease and its related fallout. I'll have some quick details of the new case Canada reported earlier today, and Dave Dickey will go through Japan's decision Friday to close its border to U.S. beef because a New York processing facility managed to include a spine in a shipment to that nation. Dave will also fill us in on a brand new ethanol plant to be built in Linden, Indiana next year. We'll stay with the beef theme for the day during our feature segment. The Illinois Beef Expo is about a month away. U of I Extension, of course, is heavily involved in the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale that kicks off that event. I spoke with Extension's Dave Seibert about the IPT and what cow-calf and seed stock producers can expect to find on the auction block. And hey, don't forget, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens in this Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Monday afternoon, futures finished like this. The nearby hard red winter wheat March contract, 380, down 4 cents. July off 3 cents at 378.5 for the harvest month in Kansas City. From Chicago, nearby wheat futures finished the March contract at 326, and they were down a half for the day. May futures at 337 were down a quarter, and July wheat at 346.5 were down a quarter. September futures at 356.5 were unchanged. December contract in the wheat pit down a quarter of a cent at $3.69 for the day. Corn futures now, March contract 208.25, up 3.25. May at 218.25, up 3.25, and July contract at 227.25, 3.5 cents higher. September corn 235.5, up 3.25. December futures at 246, they're up 3.5, and the March contract at 253, up 3.5 cents. March oats down 1 for the day. May contract down 1.25 at 182.75. Soy complex bean futures March contract 574.5, they were up 6.5 today. May futures at 585, up 7.25, and July up 7.75 at 595.25. August contract at 597, they were up 7. And September's at 596 were 4.5 higher. November beans at 7.25 higher at 604.75. Bean meal futures finished at 180.50. They were up 110. Bean oil at 24 higher at 21.52 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, very quickly, the settlement prices there look like this. Feeder cattle, January contract, 113.05. They were up 45. February live cattle at 95.50, 7.5 were down 20. And the Feb lean hogs were off 15 cents today at $59.10.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let me take up the BSE issue very quickly. Here's the latest that we have on that, and this is from a USDA announcement this morning. Secretary of Ag Johann says he appreciated the opportunity to speak with Canadian Agricultural Minister Andy Mitchell today, who apprised him of the new BSE detection made in Canada, and he was assured that based on the information which was supplied, that he anticipated no change, and let me repeat that, no change in the status of beef or live cattle imports to the U.S. from Canada under their established agreement. He goes ahead to say, we will continue to evaluate the situation as the investigation continues, and that he has directed USDA's teams to work with Canada at its investigation. Minister Mitchell has, of course, pledged his full cooperation. The BSE positive cow comes from an about Alberta dairy farm of about 400 animals. Trace back there is said to be very good, and they're able to trace back other animals to other animals born about the same time, and of course to the sons and daughters of that particular dame, who is about 6 years old. And the feed ban went into place in 1997. That's the ban that won't allow animal-to-animal feeding to be fed, animal-to-animal parts fed back to dairy cattle or cattle of any sort in either the U.S. or Canada. It came at different times in those two nations. So it'll be interesting to see because how this one plays out, because this particular animal born after the feed ban was in place by either two and a half, or 3 years, something like that. Kurt Kimmel on hand with us to tell us a little bit more about what we've been hearing on the Squawk Box. It doesn't appear that much happened at the Mercantile Exchange in response to this or to Japan's closing of their border to the spinal cord that was shipped to them out of New York.
Yeah, sort of a neutral impact between the two. As far as Japan goes, as a one case instance, the USDA is on top of that, evaluating the situation and trying to smooth it over, talking to the packer out of New York. There's some cases that was sort of routine, and they just happened to find that occurrence happening. As far as the Canadian issue, it's going to take an announcement to ban, but you know, ways it sounds, it's going to be business as usual until they investigate that further time.
And then let's talk about what happened to the Board of Trade, because it might be more interesting to discuss the bean pit for the day, where beans rallied to $5.76 in the nearby, the March contract. It's $5.74 on their settlement price. They were up 6.5. November contract up 7.25 today. What caused the rally?
Well, a little bit of a weather concern in the southern hemisphere. Argentina, you look at the big pictures, they've been getting some timely rains, per se, average, and the concern is maybe they could go dry here for another 5 to 7 days, per se. And so that gave the market a little bit of fundamental news to get us into some technical buying. There's some programs that bought in here short term, but the key is today's highs. Today's highs is some points to watch here. As we go through the rest of the week, we got in some gap areas and sort of failed to go on much higher than that. So there's some timing programs that suggest that today would be the high for the week. So we'll actually sit back and see if technically if we can follow through or not and fundamentally get a better handle on the weather forecast. The midday weather maps did add a little bit of moisture into the South American forecast as we extend past day 7.
It might be a good time, and I'll take time out and let you talk about this just a little bit, but Dave Dickey will be up tomorrow night at, I think, Normal West, is that right, at the high school, where yourself and the folks at Bates Commodities will be putting on a program, and there are a lot of good speakers there. Steve Freed from ADM Investor Services Research will be on hand. Who else on that one? David Hightower, I think?
We have David Hightower from the Hightower author of the Hightower Report, and also Dan Zwicker from AgriVisor there. We wanted to try to gather some of the most prominent advisors and analysts around, and so we were fortunate enough to land those three individuals come here and visit with us and clients and friends and neighbors and whatever on tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
And is that's absolutely free? Do they have to, I think that's right, do they have to pre-register for that, or then just walk in?
No, what we did is we went ahead and reserved the Normal West Community Cafeteria there, so we would have plenty of room. As you know, as you try to schedule events at different locations, you're sort of set in numbers, but we want to keep the number open, free to the public, and anybody that's interested in commodities is to come on by. Not only are we going to talk about grains, but also, too, David's going to address the gold, energies, and some of these outside markets been having dynamic moves here this fall and winter, too.
Should be a good thing. How do you get to the Normal West High School? Where is that? Is that a new one? Is that right?
Well, it's on the west side there. It's kind of hard to get from the west side, but if you take college through Bloomington Normal, and it's clear on the west side by the interstate there. You'll be able to see it from there.
Okay, that'll be an easy thing to do. So if you're interested, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, you can see all of those guys along with Pete Manhart and, of course, Kurt Kimmel, who's joining us this afternoon to talk about the marketplace. Anything else in the market that sort of struck your fancy for the day? I saw that wheat futures were moving fairly good during the day, and we talked a great deal about them on Commodity Week on the idea that they really need to rally pretty decently.
Yeah, looking at the weather situation out west, there's some areas that's been just devastated by the dry conditions last fall and this winter, and if they don't get some rain as we go into the spring, we're going to see some pretty serious damage. The Chicago wheat and even the KC wheat did challenge some downtrend lines and failed. We did see some reversals down, especially in the KC, but I think any type of 4 or 5 cent pullback in KC wheat could be bought. I sort of like coming in here and buying these May $4, $4.10, $4.20 calls here at the market and risk half of what you pay for them. There's some analysts feel that there's probably another 80 cents to a dollar up in the wheat futures as long as we continue to see dry conditions out in the western belt there.
Kurt, we appreciate you being with us today.
Very good.
Thanks. Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Monday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for our look at the agricultural weather. AM580's own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. Forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies. Lows, he says, will range from 24 in far northern Illinois to 32 in the south. Tomorrow, Ed says, windy in all sections in the north and central parts of Indiana, becoming cloudy, some flurries arriving. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds, some sunshine. Highs tomorrow, he says, ranging from 36 in the north to 54 in far southern Illinois. The extended forecast from our own Ed Kieser, Wednesday in northern and central Indiana, cloudy, some scattered snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Thursday, he says, mostly sunny. Friday, partly sunny, breezy, a bit milder, a chance of some showers in the northern and western parts of Illinois. Dave Dickey is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Japan has ordered inspections of all U.S. beef imported over the past month and called for a full explanation of an American violation of a bilateral beef pact. Japan halted U.S. beef imports last Friday after inspectors found spinal bone considered at risk of containing mad cow disease in an American veal shipment. A delegation of U.S. agriculture officials heading to Tokyo is scheduled to discuss the issue with Japanese agriculture, health, and foreign ministry officials tomorrow. National Cattlemen's Beef Association President Terry Stokes says yes, there was a violation, but no one was at risk.
Clearly, it's what's being investigated is a technical violation. It's not a safety issue. And we very much support USDA's aggressive steps that they are taking to see what, to address this occurrence. So we want to give the Japanese government and consumers, the assurance that U.S. beef is safe and that we're taking this matter very seriously.
U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns says an investigation is underway and adds the processing plant that exported the questionable beef has been delisted, thus no longer eligible to ship beef to Japan. And Johanns has directed additional USDA inspectors to every plant approved to export beef, and a new stipulation that 2 USDA inspectors review every shipment of beef for export. RCAF USA CEO Bill Bullard says this latest U.S. beef violation reinforces the motion RCAF filed with the Federal District Court in Montana earlier this month.
We told the court that there's clearly evidence showing that the U.S. has not yet imposed sufficient restrictions so as to ensure the highest level of consumer confidence. And so what we have is now a trail of failures to properly enforce our BSE mitigation measures, and as a result, it's hurting our consumer confidence both domestically and globally. We need USDA to get their house in order. We need some leadership out of that organization so as to ensure the long-term viability of this industry. We're producing the best beef in the world out of the best of conditions, but we have to learn that we must do what our customers are asking for, or we're not going to stay in business very long.
Japanese officials say until the matter is resolved, no American beef will be allowed into Japan. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Robert Zoellick offered an apology over the mistake and promised to take appropriate measures promptly. Even if Japan does quickly resume U.S. beef imports, there's still the question of how the latest incident will impact Japanese consumer demand for U.S. beef. Phil Tseng is president and CEO of the U.S. meat export.
Well, I'm always concerned about consumers in Japan and consumers elsewhere. I think that the Japanese press plays a big role in influencing the consumers, and I'm watching very closely how the press is going to depict this. But at this point in time, I think everything has been somewhat calm. But I think we're going to have to wait to see how the consumers are going to react to this.
Planners for a new ethanol plant in Linden, Indiana, say the facility will be state-of-the-art. Steve Durham is chairman of AS Alliances Holdings, part of a consortium responsible for the build.
We've got Cargill, we've got United Bio, who's going to do the managing. We've got HDR, who's a leading international engineering architectural firm. They're doing the project management for the project. We've got ICM, the number one technology provider, and we have Fagen, the number one builder of ethanol plants in the United States. And we brought that whole team together. We brought all the capital sources together. We brought the debt, equity, subordinated debt, all the financing, and put the whole package together.
The plant has a targeted opening date of July 2007. The plant is designed to produce 100 million gallons of ethanol per year, along with about 315,000 tons of dried distiller's grain. And the National Cotton Council, citing several media reports, says Brazil is likely to restart the cotton dispute remedy proceedings in the World Trade Organization by late January or early February. Brazilian officials are complaining the U.S. has not changed its marketing loan or countercyclical programs and spent a record amount of money on the cotton program last year. The NCC says if Brazil revives its challenge, it likely would focus on the marketing loan program and the countercyclical program, both of which apply to more crops than just cotton. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Speaking of Dave, he'll be in Normal, Illinois tomorrow night for another one of our Ag Outlook meetings. This one is actually a Bates Commodities program. David Hightower of the Hightower Report, Steve Freed of ADM Research, and Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services will be on the panel at the Normal West High School. That's in Normal, Illinois. This is a free program. Starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow night in Normal. It's the Bates Commodities Outlook Program. David Hightower of the Hightower Report, Steve Freed of ADM Research, and Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services will be there. We hope you join them as well. Well, up next, the Illinois Beef Expo is less than a month away. As you'll hear, this premier beef event kicks off Thursday, February the 23rd, with the performance-tested bull sale. The Illinois Beef Expo is held on the fairgrounds in Springfield. It runs from Thursday the 23rd of February to Sunday, February 26th. It includes a trade show and purebred competitions. The Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, or IPT Sale, kicks off the Beef Expo. University of Illinois Extension's Dave Seibert organizes that sale.
That's right. It's one of the bigger events that I'm involved with each year, and that, of course, is the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale. It's always a lead-off event of the Illinois Beef Expo, which, of course, is probably the biggest beef cattle event that we have in Illinois. And, of course, the bull sale will be held on Thursday, February 23rd. It'll be in Springfield on the Illinois State Fairgrounds. We'll have catalog 141 bulls. Majority of those are Angus, but again, this year we have an increased number of Simmental. Actually, we have 33 Simmentals in the sale, as well as 5 Charolais and 4 Polled Herefords.
About 110 bulls will be auctioned on the first morning of the expo. Seibert says the sale is very popular because of the emphasis on EPDs, or expected progeny differences.
And people know that they just can't raise a calf. They got to know something about that product once it goes into the feedlot and ends on the rail. So a lot of the traits we emphasize really have an impact on the end product.
Those traits are bundled in the sale bill as the EPD's expected progeny differences. It is a way to measure how the bull being purchased will pass on its genetics to the offspring and how that bull compares to others in its breed. Seibert says there are six primary traits that make up the animals in the IPT, the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale, and they are very valuable.
Four of those are production traits, meaning birth weight, weaning weight, yearling weight, and maternal milk. But, of course, an area that's getting a tremendous amount of interest because of higher premiums for high-quality beef is our carcass traits. And, of course, the two that we look at is marbling or intermuscular fat, and that determines quality grade. That's when you go and you select, let's say, a choice or maybe the white tablecloth type beef. The other one is ribeye area or yield grade, and that's composition. So those two traits are extremely important.
The bulls in the IPT sale are ranked on these six traits against the other animals in their breed. The rankings are based by percentile and broken out by the trait. In this way, the seed stock or cow-calf producer can purchase a bull that meets their individual genetic requirements. For instance, if their herd doesn't gain weight as quickly as they'd like by weaning, they can look at that score and choose to purchase a bull most likely to increase daily weight gain to weaning. The Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale is set for 8 a.m. Thursday, February 23rd at the State Fairgrounds in Springfield. Those interested can get a sale catalog early by contacting Dave Seibert at the University of Illinois East Peoria Extension Center. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL. We're joined now by Wyatt Muse of the Andersons here in Champaign County to take a look at the cash grain market for the day. Hi, Wyatt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this cash grain market. As I was looking on Farm Doc at the cash grain prices, it appears that at least in the corn, things have leveled out in the recent couple of days and stayed fairly steady. Is that the case there at the Andersons?
Yeah, there's been some board sell-off over the past few weeks, but that's been matched up with an improving basis, not just here, but pretty much everywhere across the Midwest, and so that's kind of equalized. Corn was up a little bit today, and I think that was mainly in result of the Informa numbers coming out saying that the United States is expected to plant about 2.3 million less acres of corn.
And what are you hearing from your head office there at the Andersons about planted acreage?
We're staying fairly consistent with the Informa numbers. We definitely believe that the acres are going to be down, not necessarily here in central Illinois, but some of the more marginal areas. Anderson actually has some elevators in the Michigan area where they'll probably switch those acres over to some more specialty crops or maybe into soybeans and wheat. And that's especially true also in the western Corn Belt where they're going to have to pay for irrigation.
As you may know, I've been on the road the last couple of weeks with the corn and soybean classics. And what I heard in most of central Illinois from some of the dealers, some of the farmers, that was that beans seem to be an option that many are considering and probably will even be increased in a portion of the central part of the state. Are you hearing the same thing from the local area here in east central Illinois?
Locally, I feel like our soybean increase is going to be limited to people cutting out some corn-on-corn rotations. The Informa number that came out this week predicts the United States to increase soybean acres by 3.9 million, which is a fairly large increase, and it's kind of interesting that the beans were up today on the board also in spite of that. But locally, I just have a feeling it's going to be driven by nitrogen prices and whether or not people want to continue a corn-on-corn rotation.
And your bid's there for the day at the Andersons?
Cash corn, 204, fall delivery, 230, cash soybeans, 562, and fall delivery, 589.
Wyatt, we appreciate you being with us today.
Yep, you have a good afternoon, Todd.
You too. Wyatt Muse is with the Andersons, joins us here from their office in Champaign County on Monday afternoons. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the folks at the Chicago office of Chesapeake Energy. In just a moment, we'll catch up on the local newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Rod Blagojevich says he hasn't abandoned his idea of bringing Keno to Illinois, but he's challenging Republicans who don't like the idea to come up with a better plan to help fund his $3.2 billion capital improvement bill. The governor was in Collinsville today touting the proposal that he outlined in his State of the State address. A grand jury will take a new look at a nearly 20-year-old double murder case in Paris, Illinois. But the attorney for a man freed after spending years in prison for the murders says a special prosecutor is using the investigation to fight his client's lawsuit. Randy Steidel is suing the city of Paris and Illinois State Police. He says authorities tried to frame him and a co-defendant. Although Steidel was freed 2 years ago, authorities still consider him a suspect in the 1986 murders of Dyke and Karen Rhodes. The Indiana Senate has passed a resolution urging the Indiana House to challenge a court ruling that prohibits it from beginning meetings with some kinds of prayers. A federal judge ruled that the official House proceedings can't begin with prayers that mention Christ or promote a specific religion. The Senate was not named in the suit, but senators have switched to a moment of silent reflection instead of prayer. The Indiana House is holding informal prayers at the back of its chambers. Illinois Attorney Lisa Madigan, or rather Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, says Illinois' nonprofit hospitals don't do enough to help the poor and the uninsured. Madigan is unveiling proposed legislation today that would require most of the state's hospitals to spend at least 8% of their operating costs on charity care. A Spanish-Australian consortium is the winning bidder to lease and operate the Indiana Toll Road for 75 years. Governor Mitch Daniels says the high bid of $3.8 billion came from the group called Statewide Mobility Partners. Money from the lease would be used to fund other highway projects. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. This is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. We're joined now by meteorologist Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Mark, what's things like in South America that seem to drive the Chicago Board of Trade bean pit today?
Well, what we're seeing right now across, especially Argentina, is a slightly different pattern than what they've been in here over the past few weeks. If you recall back, not this last week, but 2 weeks ago, they got bombed with rain across Argentina, many areas getting 2, 3, 4, 5 inches of rain or more. Since then, though, they've gone relatively dry, and a little bit of thunderstorm activity here and there at the present time, but as we go through the next couple of weeks, it looks like overall a drier than normal pattern. For Brazil, though, they are turning much more active across the southern areas. That is improving their soybeans here, especially those in the midst of blooming and pod development. And so overall, when you look at a soil moisture standpoint, the vast majority of South America is in really good shape at this time. Now, Argentina is trending drier, and I think that's what at least is getting some people concerned. Us here at Chesapeake Energy aren't really that concerned at this time, and that's really because in Argentina, back 7 to 10 days ago, they got 3, 4, 5 inches of rain, so that should hold them over for a while. What they'd like to see now is at least one more shot of rain to finish off the soybean crop, and so their window there is going to be during the first half of February. So we do have to wait until then, but that is the time frame where they're going to need a shot in the arm here to pretty much finish off the crop.
Tell me about the corn, cotton, and wheat growing areas of Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, the driest places where they might be and how dry they are.
Well, for some areas there, they've had some of the driest 12-month periods here over the past year. You're talking about historical dryness on a long-term standpoint. Not even in the short term, though, the past 3 to 4 months have been exceptionally dry across that area. And at least coming up here, it does look like they're going to see some precipitation across that area. Now, they're not going to get inundated by heavy rain or snow, you know, such as in the way of 1, 2, 2 to 3 inches of precip, nothing even close to that, Todd. But what they're going to see is a progression of systems that will put down light amounts across that area. So it's a big change than what they've seen here lately, but still not enough to make up those long-term soil moisture deficits. So, yeah, for winter wheat across that area, as well as looking forward to the summer crop season that lies ahead of us, they're going to need a lot of rain here coming up to improve those soil moisture conditions and aid the crop.
And close out our time together by discussing natural gas supplies and what you see as we've been through what's been a very mild January.
Yeah, well, it certainly looks like we're going to put January down in the record books as one of the warmest Januaries of all time. And as a result of this warmth, our just withdrawal of natural gas out of storage has been very low. In fact, since records have been kept over the past 10 years, it's been some of the lowest withdrawals during this winter time frame. So the warmth that we've seen, that's definitely taken its toll here on natural gas, at least had a significant impact here. And that main impact has been to just, very little demand at what normally is a time of very high demand for natural gas for heating homes.
Mark, we appreciate you being with us.
Okay, you're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy and joins us here on Monday afternoons from his office in Chicago. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our pre-opening market report with Dave Dickey, and that you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain report, the weather right there on our website. Just go to WILL.UIUC.edu, click on AM, and then agriculture. And if you have the opportunity, please do subscribe to our weekend newsletter. There's a link on that page as well. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a very good afternoon.